Please remain standing as you are able for the reading of God's Word. The text for this morning is from Matthew chapter 5, verses 3 through 11. I'll be reading in Turkish. The English text will be on the screen as I read.
Ne mutlu ruhta yoksul olanlara, çünkü o göklerin egemenliği onlarındır. Ne mutlu yaslı olanlara, çünkü onlar teselli edilecekler. Ne mutlu yumuşak huylu olanlara, çünkü onlar yeryüzünü miras alacaklar. Ne mutlu doğruluğu acıkıp susayanlara, çünkü onlar doyurulacaklar. Ne mutlu merhametli olanlara, çünkü onlar merhamet bulacaklar. Ne mutlu yüreği temiz olanlara, çünkü onlar Tanrı'yı görecekler. Ne mutlu barışığı sağlayanlara, çünkü onlara Tanrı oğulları denecek. Ne mutlu doğruluk uğruna zulüm görenlere, çünkü göklerin egemenliği onlarındır. Benim yüzümden insanlar size sövüp zulmettikleri, yalan yere size karşı her türlü kötü sözü söyledikleri zaman ne mutlu size. This is God's word. Please be.
Yeah. Well, good morning. So we're just going to jump right in on this two-part series on the Beatitudes. As we understand and talked about last week, the word blessed just really means fully satisfied. It doesn't talks about just this present state of something happening. I think the word blessing, and I've been blessed. How are you? I'm blessed and highly favored. I think it's tossed around really loosely in Christian circles. I don't believe it's intended, but it talks about the end of a thing. When I'm blessed, blessed is a man that walked not. It talks about the end of a thing. When God talks about blessings and being blessed, it speaks to the end, not my particular circumstances as it be right now. It doesn't talk about somebody gave me something and I'm blessed. Somebody did something and I'm blessed. I got promoted, I'm blessed. It speaks to the end. The same way as cursing. When Jesus cursed the fig tree because it didn't have figs, they went to Bethany, and on their way back, the disciples noticed that it was withered because he spoke to the end of a thing. So when we talk about bless, we speaking to the end, the poor in spirit, they that mourn, the meek. I made a comment that seemed like, this last week, if you were here, this is a green Lego, and he just inserted something that, where does this fit with the woman that was accused from the Pharisees and the scribe? They talked about the law of Moses, and I said that Jesus stooped and wrote with his finger. It's sort of, Jesus, as he began to teach this famous Sermon on the Mountain, in verse 20 of this, he talked about, I did not come to abolish the law that the scribes and the Pharisees was talking about, the law that they was accusing this woman that was caught in adultery. I didn't come to abolish. Basically, he actually said that everything is going to be accomplished. Every dot, every tittle Nothing would be lost in what was already written. I came to fulfill it. But he says something really unique. He said, except your righteousness surpass that of these folks, you really haven't accomplished a whole lot. See, the scribes and the Pharisees' righteousness was built on, I'm Abraham's seed. My righteousness was that because of who I was, who I was connected to, my knowledge of the scriptures that made me righteous. No. Unless your righteousness surpassed that, you really haven't accomplished much. The poor in spirit is knowing that I don't have it and I need it. Part two, let's go right in. It says that the pure in heart, the pure in heart. What is it? The pure in heart, for they shall see God. Everything is based in, framed up with eternity in mind. There's a couple of terms used when describing pure. One is gold. The process for purifying gold is pretty unique. Gold is mixed in a what they call a crucible and is put in a heat. It's so many degrees Celsius. I mean, it's so hot. But it's mixed with another metal. Could be copper, tin, could be silver. It's mixed in that and it's heated. Then the blower, or bellows, blow, because gold does not react to any of the outside elements. But the other metals does, tin, copper, and silver. So when the blower blows on this hot liquid, the other metals abstract all of the impurities from the gold, and it rises up in the form of what they call dross. And the dross is skimmed, and they do this process, they do this process to get to the purest form of gold, 18, 14, 16, 24 karat gold. But if you see a pure block of gold, a bar, it's just distinctive. It looks different. And that's what happens is the pure in heart, that we are mixed with people that are not the way we are, and we don't act self-righteous. We are mixed with them, but because of my heart and your heart, something happens that I don't respond the way they respond. Under pressure, let me just make this, the shock collar's off. Okay. Because the other metals react to the atmosphere, it comes up. When God is using to purify you and I of some things that should not be in our life, he puts us in the same process, this crucible, a heat. In trials, in tribulations, and because we don't react different, it takes the things out of us that don't need to be, and then we become pure in heart. Another word for pure is sincere. In the Greek, it means without wax. When I am sincere, I am pure. I don't have any other motive. Without wax. Back in the Roman days, they set up these sort of like a farmer's market where people would travel and they would set out all of these expensive artifacts and sculptures and vases, and they were captivating to the eye. But if they were damaged, they would fill it in with wax, the cracks, and paint over it. But a person who knew that would set it in the heat. There we go again, the heat. And the heat would melt the wax. So I am not sincere in my dealings with you because I'm hiding the flaws. When we are pure in heart, there's no hidden flaws. We understand that God brings us through, and he puts us through the heat. The scripture says in 1 Corinthians that God knows just how much we can take. He is a faithful God. He will not put you and I through no more than what we can handle. He knows how much heat to turn up to get the things out of us. How many know we all got some stuff need to come out? Well, yeah, I'm glad. Yeah, that's a good one there. Yeah, we got to get it out. And this is the thing. Sometimes we live with a limp, or we live with something so long, it becomes a part of our identity. But, you know, the spouse know the real deal. Let me give my wife a shout out. Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, wave your hand, honey. That's Roxanne, and that's my wife of September. Be 30. Oh, wow. 31 years. Somebody need a medal. Huh? She said her. And then this is our nephew, Chris. Raise your hand, Chris. Yeah. So you just identified yourself. He said no. So that's, we have Roxanne and I, 31 years in September. We have 4 adult children. They, you know, in Iowa, Texas, and 2 are here. And so they all gone. And a couple of years ago, Roxanne's youngest sister passed away, and a single mom with 2 boys. And we became the legal guardian of Christopher and his brother. So we have an 8-year-old and we have an 18-year-old at home. The Lord had positioned us to have the home and empty, and we just want to be a blessing to those young men and show them the ways of the Lord. And so it's, I better move on before I get a little. So God knows just how much we can take. Seem like oftentimes when we're going through things, we can't explain why. But he's a faithful God. He knows how to get the impurities. Some gold look pure, but there's still some stuff in there. The only thing that takes it out is the heat and mix with the other metals. That's it. There's no other way to get the impurities out of the gold. The next one is, blessed are the peacemakers. This is not simply someone who is trying to stop a feud between people, but a peacemaker is a believer who has experienced the peace of God and bring that peace to others. In Romans 12 and 18, it says that if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with, you know, everyone. If it's possible, if it's up to you, you don't cause the things to really become worse. Ephesians says, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bonds of peace. Peace doesn't just simply come. especially in the days that we're living in. In the days that we're living in, it's really hard to even speak your mind or even let your position known about certain matters without causing a conflict or an argument or a disagreement. I think one of the most powerful messages I heard was from your pastor when he talked about living in exile and what our position should be as Christians, to regardless of the land that we're in, our job is to make this the best place possible because of what God has done in our life and who we are now become. I'm a peacemaker. Peace. The word peace in the Greek actually means nothing. There's nothing missing. It denotes I'm complete. I'm not lacking problems or situations, the conflict, but I don't have anything missing in my life. Biblical peace, I saw a painting of a person that painted describing what biblical peace is, and it was a man in a boat, and it was a storm. Kind of, you can see the painting with the winds and the waves crashing on the boat, and things was happening. The rain was coming, the winds was blowing, and in the corner of the painting was a bird sitting on a rock, and you had this little silhouette with little musical notes coming out of its mouth. That was the depiction of biblical peace. Everything around me is going wrong. It's windy. It's crashing, raining. If it's not one thing of another, but through it all, I'm singing. I have peace because I don't lack anything. When you experience this peace, this is what you pass on to others. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness. Some people suffer for doing evil, but that is punishment, not persecution. And some are persecuted for reason unrelated to righteousness. Jesus wasn't offering a general blessing to all victims here. No, he was offering for those who are persecuted for actively pursuing the kingdom of righteousness because of their faith. This persecution talked to missionaries. In the United States, it's pretty good. There's Christians on the other side of this continent, in different countries, that are being persecuted for their faith. Way different than any of us can comprehend. They hiding in dens and caves, witnessing to those to share the gospel. If it's found out, they can be persecuted for actively promoting the things of God. Today, sometimes you don't know where you stand as a believer. Yeah. Higher power. Well, I better not mess with that. Well, too late. He said that if you're ashamed of me before men, I will be ashamed of you before my Father. His name is Jesus Christ. It's not some name we choose to give him so we can be politically correct. He's the second person in the Trinity. His name is Jesus. Let's make no doubt about it. When you stand for that, sometimes things is going to happen to you. If you are fearful of that, you will kind of make some different inroads and declare something different. 1 Peter says, if you are suffering for doing good and endure it, this is commendable before God. Standing up for what's right because of my faith is to be commendable, regardless of what the consequences are. This next one is, blessed are ye when men revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for his name. Persecution comes. This type of stuff happens because of when I stand up for his name. I don't have any skin in the game other than he saved my life. My name doesn't mean a whole lot. But when I stand up for his name, oh, I have to understand that something is going to happen. This is going to come with a cause. One proof of being blessed is the willingness to endure unfair treatment on account of faithfully following him. 1 Peter 4:12 and 14 says, dear friends, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeals that has come on you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice in so much as you participate in the sufferings of Christ. Wait a second. I'm supposed to feel good about this. So that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed. Remember, we're talking about eternity. We're not talking about how this thing affects my life right here and right now. Eternity is always in view. The Beatitudes is dealing with eternity. It's not dealing with my current state. He's addressing people that's hungry. He's addressing people that's thirsty. He's addressing regular fishermen and tax collectors. Those are the people in the crowd, normal people, that he was trying to say, don't be like these scribes and Pharisees. Your righteousness has to surpass them. If you are insulted because of the name of Christ, you are blessed. For the spirit and glory of God rests upon you. Finally, when you and I realize that we are poor in spirit, when we mourn over sin, our sin and that of others, when we walk in humility, when we seek peace, understanding that persecution is a part of the deal, regardless of what form it comes. As I mentioned last week, this blessedness is not stagnant. It is progressive. It is something that we don't perfect. We don't arrive at this place of completeness where I can let my hair down, put on my flip-flops, and I'm fine. But all around me, it's chaotic. My neighbor is really, his lawn is his thing, you know. I don't know if you have a neighbor like that. I mean, holy buckets. I think this guy must, in the back, he must cut his grass 2-3 times a week. And I guess he look over the fence and say, man, when is this guy going to cut his grass? In the fall? Yeah, I think he catches the leaves. He's like one of these, you know, kung fu masters. He's out there. And me, I wait till they all fall. True story. I mean, I bring the Team Challenge guys out, and it's over 80 bags. And I'm fine. My yard is good. Just look. But situations cause what's in my yard to blow in your yard. So the blessedness is not just a personal thing. It's a societal issue, because if we're not careful, things blow into our lawn. I didn't ask for it. I can't shield against it. The only thing I can do is stay hungry, keep striving for peace, keep witnessing for those, to those that are in need. God has given us all instincts. We all are created with instincts. For women, they call it mother's intuition, that a baby, you know, it's 20 babies out there, 20 kids. But if that child cries, mom jumps because she knows it. We have this thing built in us. So society causes us not to operate from this instinctual place. So we can see things going on. We can hear what's going on. Right now, I don't think, honestly, we can turn a deaf ear to what's going on in our society. I'm not getting political. That's not what I do. But it'll blow in the backyard. My job is to stay hungry. If I see someone in need, I try to minister to that pain in a way. I was at this place last night preaching and did a training for this whole church on how to administer Narcan. I need to be prepared. I need to be progressively growing and striving to the things of God. I just want to say this. God bless you for all you do. Stay hungry. Keep striving we're never there. Stay blessed. Be fully satisfied. But pass this thing on to others. I leave with this. The 5,000, the people that he was ministering to, once they heard, he said, now they need to eat. What do you have? Oh, we just have this. It's not enough for everyone. Just make everyone sit down. He blessed it. They all were satisfied. Then he said, pick up what's left. They picked up 12 baskets. Maybe it's a coincidence. It's 12 disciples. Maybe it's not. Once he satisfied people, he'll satisfy the leaders. He'll satisfy everyone that hears his word and hunger. So let's cast out the net and see what we catch. God bless you, Trinity. May God keep you.